Mr. David Butler, Reel 10. Now, we're talking about when you went up to Invergordon to join HMS Zest. Now, what was HMS Zest? I'm not quite clear about
it. It was a destroyer. And it was a training ship for ships that used to come up to Londonderry. I think we were sort of a Londonderry guard ship, as you might say, in them days. Because HMS Sea Eagle was the shore base in Londonderry. And we used to take officers out. I'm sure we used to take officers out for sea training.
So it was just a destroyer?
It was a destroyer, yeah.
An old-fashioned
one? An old-fashioned one. Well, in a minute, you'll hear how old-fashioned it was.
So what happened when you were boarded?
So anyway, we gets to Invergordon, and as I said, we watch all the ships come in and anchor, and then the motorboats from the different ships, the whalers and the cutters and that used to come, were coming in and picking up different things, dropping the postman off, picking up people like myself and that. And that, anyway, somebody said, anybody for HMS Zest? And I think three of us put our hands up. Well, yeah, okay, load in, come on, in you go. So we got on, and once again, as I said, it was still pouring down with rain. And we get on board the Zest, and the coxswain comes up. He said, okay, lads, it's a bad night. He said, you're in the stoker's mess, which is so-and-so, so-and-so. You're in here, and you're in there to the other two. And I went down the stoker's mess, and up me kit bag and hammock down there, and I reported to the killick of the mess, a Geordie. Ginger hair, going bald. I can see him now. Nice round, chubby face. Reported to him, and he says, "Ah, oh, righto." He said, "Well, there's your locker, there's your hammock space." He said, "And unpack when you've had supper." He said, "Supper's coming down in a minute." So I said, "Okay." And then I just got my hammock out of the way and put it into the hammock rack, and this bloke is coming down the steps with some trays in his hand. The next thing I know is he slips, and he and the trays of food went everywhere, and that was our supper. And I thought, I've been on the train 22 hours, stood in the pouring rain for about 5, and there's my supper on the floor, on the deck, and it's enough to make an Englishman cry. But anyway, we scraped it up, put it on plates, and we had some anyway. And then after we, and then by the time they was dishing it up, we was then mopping the floor and that, or the blokes who knew what, where all the stuff was, and we had to mop up the floor. But that was how we had it that day, and nothing much happened on HMS Zest. Oh, we did, I tell a lie. We went up to Fishery Protection. We left Invergordon, and we went 6 weeks up the Arctic Circle. On fishery protection.
Now tell me about the fishery protection patrols.
Well, they are boring. But the point is, you have to make your own entertainment up there, and all you're doing is shadowing the trawlers and putting off any Icelandic gunboats that come out to intercept them or harass them. You can't do all of them. There was about 4 ships up there, I think, 4 Navy ships. But you've got so many fishermen up there that it's a job to keep up. And you get, although you get your little fleet, excuse me, although you get your little fleet of fishing ships, they can drift off because they have a lure unto themselves. They're going to follow the fish. And it's up to the gunboats to pick the ones off like animals do. When they're hunting the prey, they pick off one of the weakest, or they pick off the one that's the oldest, or the one that strays away from the herd. That's the sort of thing that the gunboats do. Well, you've got to keep dashing on there. And we had along with the captain, we had a fisherman, a trawler captain on board, and he was their liaison officer. Can't remember his. I ain't got a clue what his name is, but he was a nice bloke, big solid man, nice bloke. And we managed to get the gunboats away from the fishermen, and then if a trawler broke down, and I was up there about 4 times, I think, on different ships, and they did break down. But when you went, when we went across to repair them on behalf of the thing to get them going quicker, the fish that they gave us was out of this world. I mean, some of it was still jumping, and it was beautiful. And I'll never forget that, eating the fish up at the Arctic, straight out to sea. And I think on this one, our captain got one of the biggest haddocks I'd ever seen. Well, I'd never seen a haddock until I got up there, to be honest. But it was massive, absolutely massive. Fed all the ship's company anyway, because he just told the butchers to skin it and that. But we had cod, and it always amazed me how white the fish was, even though a lot of it's white in the fish and chip shops now. This was absolutely snow white. It was beautiful. Rough weather, rain, snow.
What was the, I mean, you're in the Arctic Circle. What was it like?
Cold. That's all you can say. It was cold and it was nice. Couple of times seen the Northern Lights. But on the whole, it was. You could go up on the upper deck if you were sheltered. It's all according to what time of the year you was up there. Now, I was up there a couple of times when it was daylight at midnight. I'd be going down for the middle watch, which starts at 12 midnight. And I'd be standing on the upper deck in one of the wells, which is a little area below the upper deck. Although still in the open air, and you were keeping out the wind, and you could see the daylight there. And it was quite charming, actually. Nice. But you spent a lot of time up there and also in the dark. But when you had to fuel ship from a tanker, then it was really cold because you was working with, all right, rubber hoses.
Now tell me about fueling. We've not talked about how do you fuel ship.
Well, you tell the Admiralty what each day you tell the Admiralty what fuel you've got on board, and what fuel you've used, and then they know exactly what you can carry, and they know exactly how much you've got on board, and then they say, right, you will rendezvous with a Fort Drysdale or something like that, whatever, I can't think of the name of the boats now up there, and you will rendezvous at such and such a place with them, and HMS, we'll say another ship as well, so they'd fuel two at the same time with this tanker. Now this tanker was a store ship, specially built with cranes on both sides of the ship, two on each side I think it was, so that they could, if required, fuel four ships in one go. Or if they had a carrier, they could on the starboard side, they could put two arms across for fueling purposes. And they carry all sorts of fuel, diesel, oil fuel, DERF, if you've got an helicopter. In them days, DERF wasn't carried, I don't think, other than for aircraft carriers. And what have you. You would take station on them. Now, they would steam at, we'll say, 15 knots. You had to stay abreast of them. They didn't alter speed. It was you that altered speed, up or down. Sometimes it was a couple of revs down, a couple of revs up, or sometimes you'd have to increase it by about 4 to 6. Really, really frustrating. But you had to maintain station on them. Bearing in mind that they was large compared to these little destroyers. But then they'd snake this hose across and you'd connect it to an elbow that was in the deck. And then you would have different people on different tanks. And you'd start, and then you'd give permission, you'd tell them when to start pumping. And then that would go into the system, into the fueling system throughout the ship. And the chief stoker, who was in charge of it, and along with the engineer, would say, right, we're doing the fore and aft, might be starboard, forward, port aft, or something, whatever the case may be. And you would fuel ship that way. And then you would, when it come up to a certain level, you would shut the valve off, and it'd tell you when to shut the valve off, because it was all done by word of mouth. We had no telephones or anything like that. A bloke running up and down the passageway, main passageway, shouting down the hatchway to you, right, shut off when you've got to such and such, and you used to gauge it on the legs of the ladder in the because that was a foot deep. You used to gauge it on the legs of the ladder in the tank, which was tank cleaning, which was used for in and out the tanks when you was cleaning them. So when you got there, you'd shut it off, and then you'd probably go across the other side or to the next compartment and start fueling in the other tank, opening the valve and opening the other tank. But you'd already sent a message saying, stop feeding on six tank and feeding on four now, and that's how you'd done it. And then you always had two tanks that you kept until last. And then when you got onto them two tanks, you'd get the tanker to ease down on the pressure. And as it was filling up, you'd get it easing it down all the time. And then you'd say, stop pumping. And then what you used to have then was all the fuel then that was in the hoses, as much as possible, you'd get them in, you'd get your tank, you'd fill your tanks up and just give them a little bit more. And if the two reserve tanks was full, you could then open up the others. Go down and open up the others just to fill them up quite. And I mean, when you was on these old ships like this HMSS, the Destroyer, and some of the older ones, it was no fun because a lot of the fuel tanks was in mess tanks. And if you're fueling at 4 o'clock in the morning, or 3 o'clock in the morning, 4 o'clock, and everybody in the mess tanks up because you're up, because they can hear you shouting about and moving about and shutting valves and one thing and another, and putting because you used to take the lid off the tank to see the oil coming up. And a couple of times, we did flood mess tanks because you just can't help it. But that's just one of them things. And it wasn't very nice when it used to get onto the upper deck, because it used to come out the vent, the air vent that was always come out onto the upper deck at the side of the superstructure. Occasionally, some of it used to come out there. And the first lieutenant was not a happy man when that used to happen. Not a happy man at all.
How would you clear oil up from if you did spill it in a mess tank?
Well, it was just a case. You'd get your in them days, we used to use cotton wool waste. And you'd get as much of that as you could, and you'd wipe it all up, and then you'd get some detergent, water and detergent, and scrub the paintwork down and the decks, making sure the deck was clean first before the bulkhead, because 9 times 10, a lot of the decks were wood, you see, and so you'd get the decks scrubbed and what have you, and...
You'd have to do it, not the seamen.
Oh, no, the stokers had to do it. The stokers made the mess. It was the old story. That's what I believe in. If you make the mess, you clean it up. And the stokers had to do it. And then, and that was it. But at other times, it might be in the afternoon, it might be in the morning, in the evening. But them middle of the night ones were not. I'd done the same on the HMS Vanguard. I know I missed that eight, but that was the first time my fuel ship was on HMS Vanguard. And it was about 2 o'clock in the morning, I think, that we fueled ship. And it was bloody cold.
Anything else? I mean, do you remember any actual incidents with Icelandic or Norwegian gunboats?
No, we was all right. We used to charge over. And because being down the boardroom and that, see, you didn't get to see much of this, what was happening. But all of a sudden, you'd put on a spurt and you'd be shooting across. And we're going to engage Icelandic gunboat so and so, but because they were so small, you see, they used to turn tail, and they'd go back into their own zone, I think they had a 200-mile zone. I think they set a 200-mile limit, which is fishing fleets and that couldn't go in.
Are they Icelandic or Norwegian?
No, Icelandic.
They're not.
Oh yeah,
they're just Icelandic.
They're just Icelandic. Thing. I don't think the Norwegians dare poke their noses in on that score. It was an Icelandic thing. I don't think they had many. I think they had about half a dozen.
So anything else about the from
there, because we'd done 6 weeks, our captain said, right, you lads have earned a nice break, he said. Now, we all thought we was going to go and sail into Pompey. We didn't. We went to Hamburg. And we spent 5 days in Hamburg. Very good run ashore. Thoroughly enjoyed it.
What was it like? What did you do?
Well, I played football. Went to Berlin to see the Brandenburg Gate. We went on a trip to some of us. You draw your name out the hat. I think it was about half a dozen of blokes on a mess. And then they took us into Berlin to see the Brandenburg Gate.
What did you think of that? Because that was all cut off, wasn't it?
Oh yeah, no wall then. It was just Russian. There was no wall
no
there.
No wall.
Nothing.
Yeah.
There was no wall. It was just Checkpoint Charlie. That's what it was. Checkpoint Charlie. It was interesting. It was. I think it was more inspiring than what the Champs-Élysées was. The Arc de Triomphe. I thought, you know, it's got more about it, and it meant more than what the the Arc de Triomphe did, because it was a dividing zone, and unless you was really, really into politics, you couldn't understand why. But I can understand it now because I'm that much older, and I can understand now. Although with the Berlin airlift had gone on and everything, we didn't, until you get there, you didn't realise the importance of it. The important things, and then I found about six of us, half a dozen of us, found a little bar on the Reeperbahn, which was the nightclub strip and everything, and we found a little bar called the Rocky Docky, and we went in there, and we had a few beers, and then all of a sudden there was a plate of food came out to us. Some of the locals came and sat talking to us. There was one or two that was still a bit bitter about the war, but they wasn't too. They were eventually they was okay. And as Daphne and I said, we used to sit in there, and then they used to close about 6 in the morning, and we'd go back on board then. But we never used to be drunk. And then when we went ashore next night, we used to go just up to the Rocky Doggy. And we used to have a brilliant night there. And they brought music on, and all the locals took to us. And it was really good. Yeah, I enjoyed it. The Rocky Ducky. A lot of the blokes, I mean, behind the Reeper Band was the Winkelstrasse, which was the prostitutes' street where they sat in houses and looked in the windows. But you couldn't look down it because I remember now, it was, they had steel barriers there. And it was like going into, I suppose, a football ground. There wasn't a turnstile as such, but you went up to this barrier, and then you went to the right or the left of it, and then you went through in behind, and then you went in behind and walked down this sort of, into the street itself. You couldn't look down the street from outside of it. But that was all, and then we sailed for Portsmouth, and I think we had about 5 or 6 days in Portsmouth. And then it was this situation where every time you're in Londonderry, you sail on a Saturday morning. So you're back there for Monday. Every time you come to Portsmouth, you sail on a Saturday morning, which didn't please the wives, because then it was a shopping weekend.
So where were you going?
Just back to Londonderry again.
Now, you haven't actually been to Londonderry yet, have you?
Oh, no, no. When we went up to Londonderry, we got there on a Monday, and we used to meet any ships that was up there for training. We used to we'd meet them outside the Lough Foyle, and we'd exercise in the Scottish areas, around the Scottish islands and that, doing different things, submarines, small ships. When I say small ships, frigates and one other. And I don't really know, I can't remember really, what it was all about. I think it was more officers training than anything.
And was this newly commissioned ships or just ships?
Just ships. It was. I think it might have been part of a workup strategy. That used to train people from the naval, Greenock. Some of the Navy ships used to be in Greenock, some of them were stationed in Glasgow, and they used to come out, and we used to just exercise with them. Just ordinary, silly, to us, silly exercises, but that was important to the people who was conducting them and who was taking part in them.
So you'd go to Londonderry, meet these ships. Now, then would you be based at Londonderry?
Then we'd be based in Londonderry, then, and then we're talking, let's say we're talking, we'd get up there January, After leave, so let's say January the 12th, we'd get up to London now, and we wouldn't be back in the Portsmouth area until the Easter. And we'd done two tours of Iceland on the Zest.
So you went to you went up to do that again?
Yes, yeah.
Now, anything else happened while you were on the Zest?
Not that I can recall.
So the second tour, just the same as the first. And how many tours did you do at London, Rick? Just that 1-3 months?
Just the one? No, you. I was up there. I was up in the Londonderry area, unless you was on Fisher Protection, from May 58 to June 59, just over a year.
And what happened in June 59?
And then I was transferred to the reserve fleet in Portsmouth, HMS Bellerophon. And if my memory serves me right, I left the Zest to go to HMS Londonderry. But because of the gap, it was all to do with commissioning. Because of the gap, I spent a month, just, 3 weeks by the look of it, 3 weeks on Bellerophon, which was the...
Now, when was this? What month?
This is June 59.
What, into July?
A year. I spent a year. So I was sent to Bellerophon.
Yeah.
I was sent to Bellerophon for a year. June 59 to July 60.
Now, what was the Bellerophon?
Bellerophon was HMS Vanguard. It was the reserve fleet. And
so it was the old Vanguard you'd been on?
It was the old Vanguard that I'd been on.
The 15-inch battleship.
Yes, yeah. It was the old Vanguard that I'd been on. And I got the stores job, looking after the engineer's ready-use store.
Now, what state was, before I'll go on to that, but what state was HMS Vanguard as we've been, we talked about her when she was, you know, in the fleet. What state was she in now as HMS
She
General
was
Open?
She was still in a good state. It might have took about 6 months to get to sea, but other than important stuff like gunnery missiles and all that sort of thing, I would have said she was in good condition. And
how did you feel about seeing her in
pleased actually, because I thought myself, I'm going back home, because it was my first ship, as you might say.
But what did and you I think was about the fact she was now just a reserve fleet ship? Did it worry you, or
no? It didn't worry me one little bit, because you could see there was that many ships, what we called the trot, which was up towards Portchester in Portsmouth, from Portsmouth Harbour up through to Portchester. And there was that many ships up there, the Birmingham, the Newcastle, and other little frigates and destroyers was all up there, tied up, because you've got to remember, we're talking, 14 years after the war, but a lot of these ships, you see, were being paid off, or they was put up there until they could be sold to foreign navies.
Now, what were your duties? You said you were on stores. What do you mean by stores?
The engineer's ready-use, what they call the engineer's ready-use store. If anybody wanted a spanner or some nuts and bolts or anything like that to work on engineering things, not necessarily on the Vanguard, on other ships that was in the reserve fleet, that they used to keep the maintenance up to date because they wanted to sell them, they used to come to me, come down to the stores, and I used to make them sign for it. And they used to take the stuff off, and sometimes they had to come back by boat to get it. But that was what the job I had. And
that sounds quite cushy. I mean,
it is a cushy. Everything in the reserve fleet is a cushy number. It's just a sort of rest from sea, as you might say. And a job is what you make it. You see, because I went back into the reserve fleet. When I came off one ship, I can't remember which one now, but I went back. Yeah, I went back into the reserve fleet. But it was a nice, easy number, and I went and the engine and the chief stoker's office. It was still in the same place, and it was good. It was good. I enjoyed it, and I helped film I outfilm a war thing. HMS Birmingham we used. The film crew come down and I had to organise the 45-gallon oil drums, the diesel. They organised explosives and laid it all out. But I had to organise all that, get all the stores in for that type of thing, fire extinguishers. The chief stoker was the bloke who made sure that we had the firefighters in suits and everything in case anything went wrong. And we used the port side Battle of the River Plate. Was that, was that the film? Battle of the River Plate?
I'm not sure that wasn't earlier, but...
It might have been earlier. It was a war film that they'd made, and we had to... Cool Sea was early, wasn't it? As well.
I'm not sure.
Yeah. But I know we had to, and they used the port side of HMS Birmingham. And the Newcastle had a small part to play in it. They'd done some filming on there, I think. But that was basically, and then, I mean, all I was glad was I could get home every night and see the missing kids.
And where was were you in married quarters?
I lived in a little Asian estate in Portsmouth called Tipner.
So it was rented?
And it rented accommodation. It was a sublet from the Navy. The offices of the estate was in the Royal Naval Barracks, but it was all run by civilians. And I think, if I remember rightly, I bought the house we lived in. I bought it for £1,200, and then I sold it. I can't remember when. Sold it then for just over £2,000. Bought my second house on the same estate for £2,100, and I made a small profit and bought myself a little car. If I remember rightly. I changed streets. I did.
Now, anything else happened aboard, well, your old ship, the Vanguard, the Bellerophon?
No, I don't think so. I was on it when it was to go up to the breaker's yard. Lieutenant Commander, Stores PO and myself. We was just finalising all the papers for the stores and that when it hit the jetty at the Stilling West in Portsmouth.
And it what?
Hit the wall on the way out to the breaker's yard in Portsmouth.
Now tell us that story. What
happened? Well, we was going to go up to Glasgow with it, and then get up in Glasgow and catch the train back. But we were just finalising all the paperwork, and as I said, there was Lieutenant Commander, Stores PO, and myself, and we was putting everything sorted to bed. It was going to be a 3-day trip. And we was going out on tugs, and one of the hawsers broke, and it drifted into the wall by Portsmouth Dockyard, right by the Stilling West pub. And there was some dockyard mates on board as well. They tried to get some fenders out of the side, but they couldn't. And then we were just taken off, and I never seen it again. It was all then the case of the dockyard looking after it, and the tugboat people. But that was that.
Were you sorry to see it go?
Yes, I was, actually. I was. We used to say I was going for razor blades. That was the favourite saying in them days, that when ships went to the knacker's yard or the breaker's yard, I was going for razor blades. You know more about ships now because they tell you more. But you didn't. All we knew, it was just going to be cut up for scrap. And from scrap, you make razor blades. It's another byproduct.
And it upset you that it was... Did you think it was worth keeping?
That's a difficult question to ask. Because you've got to say, was it necessary? And I've got to say, yes. It was necessary. But it would probably be far too expensive for this little country to run. When you think about the cost of... the crew, you're talking about probably 1,500, 2,000 men, and all the ammunition and that, although you wouldn't need ammunition, I shouldn't imagine. If I can get into my loft, I can get my picture album out and show you it firing broadside. And that, I think I've got photos in me thing about it, but it's awkward to get into the loft at